Funded by Plus Impact is back with episode number 6 featuring Frederik Lysgaard Vind, who not only became an investor in Nøye, but also chose to become their new employee as head of people and culture. In this episode, we uncover how Frederik is succeeding in scaling Nøye to 60 people in just under 2 years, why people and culture should be a priority when building an impact startup, and also why more investors should assess culture when investing. Lean back, enjoy this episode, and don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. Welcome to the Funded by Plus Impact podcast. Today we're here with Frederik Lysgaard Vind, investor and head of people and culture at Nøye. Thank you so much for wanting to come on our show. Frederik, can you let the people know a bit about yourself, your background, and also about Nøye?
Sure. So I'm Frederik, head of people and culture at Nøye. Basically, I've been working with people and culture throughout my entire life, to some extent in the more traditional HR position and in the latest of time with a focus on people and culture within startup. And also I've invested in startups through the last 4 years before me starting full on at Nøye back in November.
Yeah.
And short about Nøye, we help people with skin concerns through customized skincare. So we're thereby revolutionizing the skincare treatment market, putting the users in the center of the treatments. That's the short story.
So you're a recent investor in Nøye. So I was curious to know and learn like why it was that Nøye was an impact case or an investor case that you wanted to jump on.
Sure. And it's actually a bit of coincidence or network that I got into Nøye in many ways. So when investing, I've always been looking for people, impact and growth. That's like been my primary criteria. So I start up with people that I like to work with and see that they are thriving and a great culture and all these things. It has to do good, the startup, that the things that we're working on should make the world a better place. And the growth part, there should be potential. We should be able to build something big on what we are on what we're working with, and Nøye ticked all of those boxes basically. But to be honest, for me to kind of get engaged was not as much regarding the impact to begin with that has grown on me quite a bit, but it was to a high degree the people. So I was working on my own startup at Matrikel 1, a co-working space, yeah, where Nøye is also based. I didn't succeed with my own startup.
Is that how you got to know exactly about Nøye? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because we were kind of had offices next door.
Yeah.
And I got to talking with the founders and experiencing the team and all these things, and we kind of started sparring about different issues regarding people and culture. And when they then at some point I met the founder Daniel with a lot of speed and what do you call it in a busy moment, because yeah, he was raising funding. He was doing a bridge round, and I just kind of mentioned that, yeah, I'll be happy to contribute to that one. And 5 minutes later we had a deal, and I was on with for small amounts to begin with, and then later follow up on that. But it was very much the people and the team that attracted me.
So you got to see the team on basically a daily basis, since you were also you know, right next to each other.
Exactly, yeah, exactly, and had lots of great conversation with especially the two founders, Daniel and Chris, regarding different people issues. Who are we to hire on this position, and how are we to do this and that? And just found that we really saw eye to eye with the importance of people and culture, and the empathy on building a great culture in order to have the impact that we want. So that was my way in. Yeah.
Super cool. So obviously you jumped on not only as an investor, but you also chose to take a more active part and actually become the head of people and culture. So what was it that wanted you to jump in and have that amount of impact on the startup, especially when you obviously also have other investor investor cases in your portfolio?
Yeah. So that was a decision made by heart and not a strategic one. Yeah. I couldn't resist, and once I got the opportunity, I just had to do it.
Yeah.
So that was there was not much thought behind it, but a lot of heart in it. I think it's important to stress that it's not me being an extremely active investor. It's me being an employee now.
Yeah.
So the kind of the power balance has some kind of shifted.
Yeah.
So now I'm an employee, and I think that's one of the most important things to
to kind of acknowledge and accept when doing this in order to succeed, because you need to really understand the role and how you are now being measured and having your performance reviewed and all these things as all others, but also to kind of really be accepted in the startup, and that has been a huge change. But it does also mean that I'm being less active in my other portfolio investments.
Do you think it helps? I'm thinking from a team perspective to look at you as head of people and culture, and not as an investor.
Yeah, I think that's extremely important. Yeah. So I mean, the team was just really quick at embracing me and letting me in and all these things and trusting me. There's a lot of trust, especially in that role.
Yeah.
And it is to a high degree important that they also acknowledge that this is it shouldn't be perceived as an investor, but now I'm a team member as everybody else. At Noi, it's actually a bit. It's not that the switch is not that tough because all employees at Noi is part of the WARN program as well, so okay. They're all becoming owners of the company as well. So it's just a matter of the amount that you have invested or vested in your WARN program, and so to that extent I'm.
Is that a program that you have implemented?
No, it's not. It's not. It was always already there, but it's one of the things that I'm trying to kind of. To electrify, what do you say, to kind of to boost from a culture perspective, because it really rhymes with some of the stuff that we are trying to build our culture and kind of value statements mm-hmm. around. It's about the full ownership, taking full ownership of what you're doing. So nobody at Noi has individual bonuses, but everybody is on the WARN program. And that's kind of a way to ensure that we're all focusing on the overall company goal and not building silos on these things, and also just to make sure that we're working well cross-functionally.
It's actually a real interesting way of kind of engaging your employees, because at most startups I've worked in a lot, I'm sure that a lot from our audience as well has experienced the same, that, you know, some people who are the top performers, they are the ones who get, you know, the chance of getting equity in the company. So this program, that actually is into also help, like the equality, I guess, that you feel, you know, equal to your peers.
Yeah.
That's really important for the culture, I feel.
I think so as well. I've just interviewed all employees and had some questions around this as well. I don't think that it's something that on a day-to-day basis means a lot to the employees, but it is something that kind of gives a feeling and an atmosphere on a more like overall level. And as you're mentioning, I think for equality and all these things, it's extremely important, but also just to kind of feel the ownership. And that is also being represented in the way that we do leadership and these things people... We're not going to micromanage. We expect that people take ownership of what they're doing and feel proud about what they're doing and are ambitious with what they're doing and all these things. I've seen a few reports on it. It's way more popular in the States than it is in Europe. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. And I would definitely recommend way more startups to do it. It's a bit complex on the legal side, but not that complex. But there's so much to gain from it, especially when being a venture-funded startup where you are kind of raising the valuation mm-hmm. these things over time. When the company is winning, we should all be winning.
Yeah, I feel, unfortunately, that there is a tendency that we in Europe with our startups, when it comes to culture, when it comes to the way that we run a startup, like we always seem to lack sort of behind the States when it comes to this, right? If you look at the Silicon Valley startups or whatever, like they always, I feel like these are the cultural stories you hear about, right? And it has always been since the beginning of time of startups. So I think it's cool that you're starting to bring it more into play. I also feel that maybe it helps establishing a framework that other startups in the ecosystem in Europe, in the Nordics, can kind of aspire to and see, right?
We definitely hope that we can inspire more to think in these matters, because it just makes so much sense for all. So
I also read somewhere that you said it in 2020, I think, that you have a plan for Noi, that you want to quadruple its staff from 18 to 60 people within 1.5 years. So when I'm reading that, I feel it's ambitious, and that's also why that I really want to know, like, so how's the plan? How are you going to get there? And also, what kind of culture are you trying to build around at Noi?
Yeah. And I agree. And to me, it's very ambitious. I'm a busy man these days, and, yeah. And luckily, I'm staffing up on my team as well. So we are more to make sure that we bring in the right talent and that they thrive and are engaged when they're with us. This to me is the most like interesting part of a growth journey, mm-hmm. a company's growth journey, because this is right now we are establishing all the processes and the organizational framework that you need for a corporate, a larger organization, but we're not getting the synergies right now. We're building everything from scratch and for the first time and finding out how to kind of get our rhythms around it. While also being busy just bringing in people and all these things. We actually had 4 new employees joining yesterday, so we are well on track,
yeah.
but still have lots of way to go. Culture-wise, there's... So culture is always a kind of a weird subject to grasp and define, because there's many kind of different definitions around it, and it's... So it's something that nobody owns culture, but everybody's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we can kind of we can form it, we can nurture it, and we can try to kind of affect it in different ways. But we don't own it, and we can't control it. And so what we're kind of doing is to look for some leading stars. This is what the values that we want to work with. This is how we as a company want to work together and how we want to perceive from the outside world and the value that we bring in. And most of the kind of, I think, the cultural subjects that we are working with is something that is kind of built into our business model.
Mm-hmm.
So for one thing, our way of formulating new products, the skincare treatments that we do, is basically data driven algorithms based putting the users in the center. So when we're selling a product, people need to fill out a skin test,
mm-hmm.
then they get the products and they actually have a skin guarantee and all that, so they can return to us. We don't feel the right effects from it, or we will formulate a new product. That's a feedback model. And once they're getting it, we're getting feedback on the results that they're getting from the skincare, and thereby also enabling us to improve both their treatments, but also getting us becoming wiser in order to treat others.
Mm-hmm.
That's all a feedback model. So of course, when we are looking at some of the culture traits that we're looking for, we're obsessing over feedback, and that's something that we're really trying to the way that we work together and communicate and all these things. Feedback is something that we're really ambitious about.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. Care is another like core value, and that's also what we kind of do with the users and what they kind of what they feel value from us is the care that we give when doing the skincare and all these things. So that's another thing that we're trying to build on. That's some of the stuff that we're looking for. What is it that kind of is unique in our business model, and that we should thereby also trying to enhance from a culture perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of focus on sustainability also in some of the ways that we want to revolutionize our market.
Yeah.
And that is also being kind of looking beyond business and trying to make this bit about something more. That's something that everybody should feel in their job and roles. That's also like a culture trait that we're trying to enforce.
Yeah. So there's also coming out a lot of reports, surveys about millennials and probably also is going to be around the Generation C when we get to that point, that I think it's at least across the board above 60-70% of all employees who seek some sort of purpose in their job. So I kind of have like a hot take for you. So do you think that people are the most important piece of driving an impact startup?
It is the impact startup. So yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. Of course, we need to work with something interesting, but that only happens when we bring the right people together.
Yeah. Well, I definitely feel the same. I think purpose can be important to people in a lot of ways. It doesn't necessarily only have to concern impact startups, but the moment that you realize that you're pursuing something else than, materialistic benefits for yourself, when you're actually working to create value for others, I really feel that has become essential. Do you think that there are more startups today that's focusing on impact? And do you think that's because of the way that employees or people in general care more about the environment now?
No doubt. Yeah, yeah. And that's also looking back with my own kind of way of investing. It is not only due to me wanting to do good for the world. It's also because I believe that is where there's huge potential for future companies, because we do see a different behavior in especially younger generation, but also the older generations are also kind of adapting to this. The impact part of being an impact starter, mm-hmm. or doing good, is something that that I'm very fascinated about right now, and really, and also a bit cautious around with my own work at Neue and how we kind of form the working culture and these things, because it's such a big driver for people. And looking at my own kind of way into Neue, I didn't, when I also mentioned that it was the people more than it was the impact that kind of attracted me to Neue, I knew nothing about skincare when starting there. And to be honest, I didn't really consider it a proper problem.
No.
Myself, I've never really had, I have a rash in there and stuff like that, but no serious like skin concerns.
Yeah.
I've only used sunscreen and never enough of it. Mm-hmm. So I had like no understanding of it when starting. Most of the people at our team are already, before starting, very passionate about it and have different kind of connections to it.
Yeah.
I didn't. So to me, it was extremely overwhelming to kind of get in, experiencing the kind of impact that we have on people's quality when they finally find a solution that works for them, and teenagers being confident about going to school again, not having too much acne, or people being able to sleep at night and these things, for not having being too much disturbed about whatever concerns they might have. But that's something that really grows with you and gives you kind of a lot of drive in your work, but it's also something that we really need to make sure that people don't burn out with, actually, because it's also jobs become more than just a job when you're working with something that really have a strong purpose that you believe in, and it's something that you should also handle with care. So I think we need, as an employer, to be very aware of how we can make sure to set out the round boundaries, which is tough for us because we're also working on a business growth scenario. But it's something to really be aware of when working with an impact startup.
It's funny you should say that, because if I have to be transparent about like Plus Impact and our project that we're doing, this is the first time where I'm working around impact. And for me, I'm also one who carries, you know, my feelings on my shirt, you know, right? And, you know, sometimes it gets the best of me. Because I start to care so much that it also becomes kind of, you know, almost an impossible responsibility to carry at all times, which also I think can push you to boundaries. I've recently experienced where I was drained all of a sudden of energy. And so I thought it was funny you should mention burnout. I think it's really an important message also to get across.
Yeah.
That of course we need and we seek to deliver impact, but we also have to take care of ourselves in the process, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's really about nurturing and keeping that fire within you. Don't become a gray suit, you could say. but you need to kind of handle it with care.
Yeah.
Because when you're working with something that really gives you energy and drive, it's also where it becomes a bit dangerous for you.
I think it's super important to speak up about these issues, because I feel that there is a tendency that people, you know, especially if you take social media, something like LinkedIn, it's such a polished media, you know, success stories, right? And you want to be part of the success, you want to share your successes. I think that it kind of ends up undermining the issues that we walk around with every day. And I'm not just talking about LinkedIn. This is social media across the board, right? Also relatable to, you know, skincare products and what you're trying to do with Neue, right? Because every single day people look at these polished images of supermodels, you know, with perfect skin all the time. And at some point, you kind of feel that you're not normal, right? That you don't fit into the ideal. And you, again, seek to strive that so much that it will destroy you. So I think it's important, culture-wise, also to not just shine, you know, these values towards your target audience, but also internally, because that's important too, right?
Yeah, definitely. So diversity and inclusion is a big subject for us as well, and some of the stuff that we're really kind of trying to kind of enhance these days and work more actively with. For a simple factor is that we have shifted from a kind of local Danish focus to a European focus, and we should try to kind of reflect our user group.
Yeah.
But in so many more ways, it's also just actually from the interviews with all the employees, it was one of the most kind of motivating factors that most mentioned was both kind of, so we have quite many different functionalities. We have an amazing data team, we mm-hmm. have the tech, we have R&D, the ones doing the formulations around the products, and of course marketing, and they're all working closely together in these loops.
Yeah.
And that's other than the impact they're doing, that's what people really love about being at Noise, is working together and across functionally. And that gives a natural great foundation also for diversity, because they're looking at problems or projects from mm-hmm. different angles. And that's what, so when we bring in new people in these things, what they always kind of put light on, that me coming from a tech background and now working with somebody in brand and one within the R&D team, really gives new perspective to my work and something that we want to bring even more of into the organization. So we're really trying to find better ways to become more diverse and more inclusive.
That's very progressive as well. I also want to get into the role of culture within funding, within fundraising, because generally you hear investors talk about, you know, yeah, I invest in the people, right? But do you really? Sometimes that's unclear. And so I wanted to get your take on culture and funding, and if you think that it's an underrated aspect of raising capital when growing a startup, you know, or a scale up. So in your opinion, what is it that makes culture matter?
I think it's an exciting subject and something that surprised me quite a bit when I started with investments,
because mm-hmm.
What I mostly saw was kind of young people straight out of school, more or less, starting a startup and raising a shitload of money and all of a sudden being CEOs from a kind of big organization, and everything is new to them.
Yeah.
So that was like the one side, and thereby also lots of experience that they would often happy to gain and are looking for, because it's everything is for the first time for mm-hmm. them. Most of what I saw in the kind of investment worlds was very inspired, you could say, by traditional investment banking.
Okay.
So looking at the due diligence phase from the kind of the budgets and the salary statements, all the kind of legal stuff and all these things, but not that much intelligent around the team. To some extent around the founders, interviewing them and kind of seeing, is this somebody that we believe in? But not that much around how are we kind of to build an organization that can scale. And which values to believe in, how do we make sure that we do this in a healthy manner. So that was a big shock to me, that, mm-hmm. that it was to a high degree treated like a kind of investment bank portfolio. There is a raising focus on these subjects and more investors are being more active and doing kind of hiring people and culture experts within their investment team and these things and being more clever about it, but mm-hmm. but there's still a long way to go, I think, and it's some of the, it's where I mean in the early days with my own portfolio, it was where I saw the biggest risk for most of my startups. The ideas seem good, and the markets, the ideas and the markets is kind of accessible. It's to a high degree a matter of how you execute the ideas,
mm-hmm.
and that is mostly regarding the team that is doing it.
But
I don't think that we have enough knowledge around what is good culture, or what is good organization, or what is good people. And it's kind of being like a football judge, so we'd all know the rules of football, and we could all probably be pretty good football judge in these things.
Yeah.
So we all feel that we are kind of experts within the people and culture arena ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But having kind of proper knowledge about what really works and what makes good culture in these things is something that I hope that we can establish an even better vocabulary for.
Yeah. I also think that it might be impossible to define this is, you know, the perfect culture.
Yeah.
But how do you, as an investor, get an accurate sense of a culture? And is it even possible to do proper due diligence on it?
Yeah. I would say no, I don't. And culture, so many things, and there's subcultures in the organization, and these things, and so no, I don't. And there's not one way, but there are some. There are some guiding principles that I find quite interesting and important when doing these things. And there's a lot about the different kind of growth stages within a startup.
Yeah.
So we're all starting with an ideation phase,
mm-hmm.
Where the idea come up. At that point, we often don't have much attention to the market. The team that is gathered is just kind of, it's very much a clan or a family culture. We're just in it together. We're trying to build something amazing, something new.
Mm-hmm.
We don't care about titles. We don't care about roles, responsibilities. We're just trying to come up with something new.
Yeah.
At some point, we kind of, okay, this could be an interesting idea. Now we want to take it to market. Now we should test if there's a market fit for what we're doing, both like on the concept and the business side of it. And that is kind of the first like huge culture driver that now we actually need to be able to go out to the market, to do proper research,
yeah,
get the feedback back, but we still need to be adjustable and kind of find our way in a market fit. And every time we get some feedback, we're looking in a new direction and figuring these things out. There's different culture to these stages that is kind of beneficial or ways to kind of organize for it. And the where we're at right now, the Series A and the scaling phase, is where I see it's more almost opposite of what you kind of did when you did the ideation phase.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we know who we are selling to, we know why, and we know how. Now we need to do it fast, and we need to scale it. We need to broaden our market perspective and these things, and that calls for a different kind of organization, and it calls for a different type of leadership. Where you at the ideation very much is a kind of facilitator and being and mentor and inspiring these things. Now we actually need to think more cleverly about communication lines, the actual responsibilities within each role, what are people being measured on, what should they live up to. All these things that are a bit boring to define, but actually also something that people, when it's being done in a good way, is really nice to have, because now you know what
yeah,
is expected and how do I contribute to the overall impact that we are aiming for. But that's totally opposite of what kind of made a good founder and team at
definitely
the ideation phase.
Like the culture, yeah, the culture kind of transform in between like the stages that your startup goes through, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why also there's not that many founders that kind of last through the Series B, because their role is kind of tipped, and that is a big shame, and that's a big loss, and that's I think where we need to be more clever, because if we can be more intelligent about both where we're at right now, but also what is the next stage and how can we prepare for it, then we're onto something good. And it's especially the preparation for, so we don't get stuck with the culture that we used to have or the organization that we used to have.
It has to progress as well.
It always has to progress. The culture is the sum of the people and the way we interact and all
yeah,
these things. And when bringing new people and these things, we need to kind of, it's also part of an inclusion plan and all these things, that these things are moving and it is dynamic parts. But let's try to hold on to what is really good and what we want to build on. But
mm-hmm,
let's also make sure that we don't kind of try to force an old culture that was better fitted for an earlier stage. And we don't keep with celebrating the old victories, but we look ahead for what will be really cool at the next stage. And
definitely,
where we are today.
I don't know if you listen to Tim Ferriss. I listen to his podcast a lot. So I heard this episode with the founder of Shopify.
Yeah.
And it was super interesting case, because they also talked about the culture around it. And one of the things he said that goes completely unnoticed, of course, because it's so internal for the C-suite, right? But what he keeps bringing up, that each year throughout their journey, they've also had to reassess themselves culture-wise, also if they fit into it now. Because as you said, for them, the business, you know, went completely mad, right? Everybody's using Shopify now for the drop shipping tendencies and whatever. It's a huge business. But he also said that in the beginning, like, they were scared shitless that, okay, so when we keep on, you know, giving more and more equity out to the investors, we don't decide anymore. So I could be gone, you know, next year if I'm not doing my job all right. And that was just, something that I've never really thought about, right? Because you think of it as your company, it's your culture, right? But at some time, your culture have to change due to the scale.
And that's, yeah. And we're doing it at rapid speed. And that's the thing about venture, because we're doing it at a forced growth pace, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the organic way. It's not the natural way. We're doing it faster than what would be the natural way. We're doing it faster than our kind of natural behavior would, because we're used to things transforming and these things, but now it's just being done faster because we are enforcing it with capital, basically.
There are also some who see, you know, slow growth you know, as the new black kind of. If you compare those two, why have you gone for, you know, a fast growth approach?
It's basically because of the impact that we want to gain. Mm-hmm. We see that we have a huge potential to do amazing impact for some of the people suffering from skin concerns.
Yeah.
And if we want to have, so it is truly a matter of how can we make the biggest impact, mm-hmm. with what we're doing. And that we saw our model is scalable in these things. So that is with raising venture. That's not on my table. That's the founders and the board and these things that have decided that. But it just makes so much sense for Noi to go that way. But I do think that there's also the slow growth is important and the new black, and I definitely believe it as well. And I think it's so the one suffering is kind of the one not really deciding.
Mm-hmm.
Either you are like true rancher, or otherwise you grow in a different way.
Yeah.
But the ones kind of trying and doing it like semi-hearted or whatever you want to call it, that's the one I see suffering from it. Because there's many good companies that don't become good companies due to have chosen the venture way and haven't kind of realized the full potential to become a unicorn or whatever you want to call it. And then it's not a good way to go, because then you're building up too much legacy and wealth and all these things. But it is an amazing way if you are able to kind of to get the growth rates going that you are looking for.
Yeah. Because I see some pitfalls by doing fast growth, specifically when we talk about cultures changing, right? And when you do it that rapidly, you do run the risk of you not being able to actually establish a culture, especially if it has to change on that, you know, pace that it does.
It's a common assumption that you will dilute your culture when you kind of scale your organization.
Someone say that every time you hire a person, your culture loses.
Yeah, but that's really kind of the ones that are locked in. This was how it used to be, and this is the but it's such an interesting statement, and I also find that the one about dilution culture when scaling, but I do believe that it happens quite often,
mm-hmm.
And mostly being due to culture not being prioritized enough in the organization. And that's one of the reasons why I fell in love with Noi, is that the founders really believe in this. So I'm not the one being most ambitious about the culture that we want to build. That's the founders. And yesterday when we had the four new starting and opening a third office, we had to split due to, we do want to be some at the office, but we can't all be in the same room and these things.
Yeah.
The impact that also has on culture when we are separating these things is, it's the founders that are the first one knocking on my door saying, are we sure that we are doing this in the right way? Are we sure that we're not losing on the culture when doing these things? And that is something that we're really, really paying a lot of attention to. How do we make sure to build on all the greatness that we have already built?
I think that's important, but also important that you're not by yourself in this. So do you think establishing a team early within culture because it's important, because there are startups who first go to, you know, the option of hiring HR people when they reach, you know, the state of being a scale up.
Yeah.
You think you should do it before that?
Yeah, and that's what I mean. I was the 15th, around the 15th employee at Noi, which is extremely early to have a people and culture person on board. But that was also due to us seeing that, okay, now we're going for the Series A round, and mm-hmm. after that, we really have to scale. So now we actually have a bit of time to prepare for the scaling.
Yeah.
But that was, I mean, that's. I've never thought that I would be employed again and be part of a bigger company and these things. So, but that was definitely the thing about being able to do this in a good manner,
mm-hmm.
Building on something great and preparing for it in a good manner. Normally in a people culture function, if you're lucky, you get in as employee number 30, most often probably be around 50. And it's at a point where you have already damaged and hurt the culture quite a bit. And then now you have to try to rebuild it. And that's, it takes so much time to kind of rebuild culture that has been hurt in different ways. So I definitely think that is something that is worth investing in. Mm-hmm. But it also needs to be founded in the beliefs in the team and the organization. There's a big kind of trend in people and culture and HR that you need data. You need to be able to prove your case in data.
Performance, right?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, all sorts of kind of performance indicators and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And because that's the way you can kind of convince the board and the management team and all these things that they should invest in, in people and culture. Data is important, and it's a way of also kind of finding out which initiatives to do in the best way in these things. But there's something prior to that, and that's beliefs. So if it's not something that is really living, that this is, we want to build an amazing organization, a company that we love getting working at every day, and these things. If it's not something that is in a core belief, you won't get far enough with data. Finance will always win because it's so easy for them to get data on their cases.
Exactly, and also because if you only stick to looking at performance numbers, you can't judge whether it's a good culture or not. So these two have to be intertwined, right?
Yeah. Most of the performance indicators that you would put on a people and culture function wouldn't make sense for us to do right now.
Yeah.
Because it's you would measure on the wrong things at this stage. Once we grow, data becomes more important for us to kind of make sure that we're prioritizing the right things. But it needs to be in the beliefs of the organization, I believe.
Yeah.
And I think it's a big... So many startups is also founded by a founder who is very knowledgeable within the area.
Mm-hmm.
It could be somebody from DTU who really knows about robotics.
Yeah.
Just to name some kind of case, right? Not thinking of anyone. That founder being extremely passionate about the products that he or she wants to build,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily being that thoughtful or engaged around building an organization and company. And they're often really good at the ideation and also the market fit phase. But then when we move into scaling things, and they're not the one kind of running everything around the, actually not doing that much of what they loved around the product, but now having to organize and manage and all these things that are more administrative and strategic,
mm-hmm.
is a huge barrier, I think. And thereby something that they really need to invest in kind of getting their mindset around what they're doing and building a large organization. Or make sure to find co-founders that are really passionate about building the organization part of it.
Interestingly enough, because culture, special cultures, they are rare. So that also means that if you have a special culture, you do attract capital. So it is important that you start to build your culture early. Something that not too many is focusing on a serious note. So if you were to advise other startups, how do you get started building a proper culture?
Yeah, and that's there's like different ways to it, and I can kind of flip it around because that's what I've been looking for when investing also.
Yeah.
And the first thing is the beliefs and being ambitious on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, just being having thoughts and caring about building a great culture, making sure that you are building an organization that people would love to work with it.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing. This thing about what makes it unique is, I think, is something where you kind of need to look into the business model and the impact that you are making.
Because
mm-hmm. That should be the culture drivers for your specific culture.
So the purpose also.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you need to look at where is it that we create value, what makes us unique to the market and these things, and let that be reflected in what you're trying to enhance in a culture. Where cult and then there's the kind of enforcing it part, which is kind of tricky. So you can do the posters and stuff like that. That often doesn't work that well. I believe where culture becomes real is when you're ready to sacrifice for it. So it's when you're taking some of the tough calls, maybe saying no to capital because you don't believe in the values of the investor,
mm-hmm.
or saying no to a potential growth scenario because it's not the impact that you're aiming for with your solution. Or whatever, but it's where you really stand up for these things and are able to do a sacrifice for it, where it becomes real, but also where you can really hurt it.
Yeah.
And that's also where when trying to grow too fast, if you bring in people that might be competent but don't kind of share the values of beliefs of the organization, that can be extremely harmful to the organization. Or for that sake, if people grow out of the role that they started in because things are changing around them and you're not acting on it or making sure that they... are developed into a new position or at least having a clear conversation about these things.
So startups notoriously have a tendency of having high employee turnover rates. Do you think that it should be a common practice to screen for cultural values?
Yeah, within the recruitment process, you think? Yeah, definitely. Definitely, and ways of doing it can be quite different, and I don't have like one solution for it, but I definitely think it's something that is important. And we had said no to quite a few really great employees, but where we didn't find either the kind of culture or the motivation going in the right direction. That's two extremely important factors.
Back to the tough calls, right? That you have to make in order to sacrifice yourself for the culture to endure.
Yeah, exactly. And that's if it goes back to the data part. Mm-hmm. A typical data point for a people organization, a people culture organization, would be time to hire. That's one of the first things when we're scaling. We need to bring a lot of people, so we need to make sure that we hire fast.
Yeah.
I'm one of the ones saying no with some of the tough calls to the employees. If I was caring too much about the data point of time to hire, I shouldn't say no at the tough calls when motivation, when we had the right competence but didn't feel the motivation or the values fitted in, where the data would be weaker. So that's some of the pitfalls when you become to measure these things too much.
Do you think that you can make culture vanity, and how can you avoid vanity?
Oh, so it's like a superficial kind of...
Yes,
kinda,
exactly, yeah, exactly. Sure. So you mentioned, you know, stickers or whatever, you know, posting a huge neon sign, whatever, you know?
Yeah, you definitely can. We need a kind of term like culture washing, like greenwashing or something.
Exactly. Oh, that's a good one.
I definitely do, and that is extremely harmful if you're trying to say that you are something but you don't live up to it when you need to do the sacrifices for it. No doubt about that. And so you need to. There's a lot of commitment when you're kind of trying to claim something, and it's extremely hurtful if kind of your employees and the team find that you don't live up to it, because what else do you not live up to then?
Exactly, that goes hand in hand with running purpose.
Yeah.
So actually, Frederik, that was all that I had on my end, but I wanted to thank you so much for wanting to come on the show again. A huge pleasure. Love talking about culture. I think it's so important. So thanks for speaking your mind up on it.
Thanks, and thanks for inviting me. It was a true pleasure to be here, and it's one of my favorite subjects and something that I really hope that we can share more light on, especially in the startup environment, because there's so much more good to do on that subject.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Thanks.